Welcome to Richer Life. Our goal is to help you drive more money, motivation, and meaning into your life. So today I'm having a pretty special conversation with Chris Carter. He is the general manager of MeU Health. And so if you're not familiar with MeU Health, you should be, because if there's one thing I know, it is that anyone who is listening to this or reading this has an interest in creating a better, fuller, richer life. And that is what MeU Health is all about. So while at Richer Life we talk about all kinds of things, a fuller, richer life with regard to finances, with regard to relationships, motivation, MeU Health is really focused on, if you could guess, health. And so, Chris, thank you for coming on and sharing some of your insights with us today.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah, so MeU Health. It's not just me health. It's not just health about me. Why is that? Why isn't it all about me?
Well, you know, that is exactly why we went after this name. It's really about all of us and the connection between us that is of interest to us here. We are all about trying to build social well-being applications that exist on the web and on mobile devices that transform people's social networks into real support systems that improve their well-being. So it's really that, you know, the social aspect of what we were doing, we felt was the central thing to what we were trying to accomplish on the web. And you know, when it came around to considering a name for this new organization, which is actually a subsidiary of a larger publicly traded health services company named Healthways, we came upon the name of MeU Health to kind of symbolize that core idea of what it means to our health and well-being to interact socially with each other.
Okay, and so you mentioned something that I think is really critical. I think in the past when someone has tried to, you know, get in better shape, lose weight, be more healthy, I think a lot of the material out there was just really focused on them and them alone. Sure, you've had people say, well, you know, get a workout buddy. So it adds a little bit of social connectedness. But what you're doing is really light years from that. And that is you're using social networks to help bring about positive health and positive well-being. And there's a considerable amount of research around this, that our social networks can at times help and even dictate our health for the good and for the bad. And so maybe you can talk a little bit about what that research shows and why is our social network so important?
That's right. And part of what sort of is at the root of our product design and design thinking is some of the latest research coming out of social network science. There are a variety of people working in this field, but right here around the corner from us, we're based in Boston and across the river in Cambridge, there's an interesting guy, Nicholas Christakis, a Harvard researcher and physician, who with his colleague James Fowler, over the past 5 to 7 years or so, written a number of published research articles and a book that has become fairly widely read called Connected, that really explores this very idea of connectedness and how health behaviors can propagate across social networks. And they even have gone so far as to begin to quantify the way in which, you know, our relationships increase or decrease our likelihood of adopting health or unhealthy behaviors. So, for example, I came to the business through an online smoking cessation service called QuitNet. And in the course of building QuitNet, which started as a project at Boston University School of Public Health, and then we spun it out as a private business with support from the university, and it was ultimately acquired, by Healthways, which is the company that I'm still associated with. But while we were working on FootNet, which in and of itself was a social intervention that was designed in that case to help people quit smoking, we came upon some of the first published research coming out of Christakis and Fowler's work, the original work wasn't about online systems or networks or anything. It was about a real-world community here outside of Massachusetts, Framingham, Massachusetts. And they tapped into the Framingham Heart Study data, which is a longitudinal data set of some 30 years. And they looked at they kind of reconstructed the social relationships of that real-world community and derived from that some pretty remarkable, almost astonishing results that have come up and been expressed in the mainstream media. You know, it was a cover story in the New York Times Magazine a couple of years ago. Sort of, are your friends making you fat? Is obesity contagious? So provocative ideas that provide a new lens on this idea of, you know, how do our social networks influence our health behavior? And as application developers, we come at that from a different angle. Like, how can we leverage social networks and the ability of the web to track these relationships? How can we use those relationships to promote and support positive, sustained behavior change?
And so I actually remember when that piece came out about are your friends making you fat? And it was quite interesting. Maybe you can provide the answer to that. Do our friends have that much influence over us?
Well, I can't give you any hard and fast answers, but I think there's a lot of truth to these ideas. And we are sort of plumbing around in this whole idea to figure out how to express this in the products that we bring to market. So in the case of smoking cessation, with which I'm most familiar, it's an area that I've been working in for 15 years and developing online interventions designed to help people quit smoking and for the most part, doing it together in groups. One of the things that Christakis and Fowler published in their work was this idea that their data over successive generations of smokers showed that entire clusters of smokers quit altogether. The social network scientists draw these wonderful maps that are, you know, where each person is a dot and the relationship to another individual is a line, and they, you know, these relationships form clusters. They found a lot of clustering among smokers, and this is sort of intuitively true because, you know, as you pass by any office building, at least up here in New England in the cold weather, you will find a whole cluster of people outside smoking. That smokers clustered together with other people that they knew. And what they also found was that they quit together. And they would disappear pretty rapidly from this network map where they previously had been designated smokers, and they would all quit together. Well, we knew this to be true at QuitNet, and in fact, the tagline that we had created in the formation of this web service was "Quit All Together." So I think there are lots of precedents and new research that show that we are in fact all connected. Now, whether or not, you know, obesity is literally contagious, I think is kind of missing the point. That I think if you know these things begin to make sense when you think about your own relationships and how some of these large health problems sort of get distributed throughout whole communities. So as application developers, I think it's time to grapple with these things.
And so what do you have any idea, based on the research, what initiates that cluster of people? For example, the cluster of people who are standing outside smoking. What is that sort of tipping point that happens? Does one person say, "Ah, I've had enough of this. I'm freezing out here. I've just got to stop smoking. This is ridiculous." And then all of a sudden, someone overhears that and they start talking about it. Like, what is that mechanism that facilitates that initial change?
Well, I think you described some of them. It's simply sort of being surrounded by people or as part of a group, having contact with an individual who begins to think and see things differently. That, you know, begins to model a different kind of behavior. And it can have a cascading effect. So part of what we try to do at MU Health in designing applications is to connect people together in ways that can support positive health behavior, which is way harder to do than it is to say, because one of the, you know, there are many steps that you have to go through to even stand a chance of affecting that, you know. So step one is designing some kind of product that engages, some kind of online product or mobile product that engages people to begin with, and then two, engages them in a social way in which they are inspired and allowed to, given the application design, to bring other people that they know into the application, where they form social connections. And then you need to know something about their health behavior or their well-being. So in our case, we're really focused at MU Health on well-being. And we have a way of measuring and quantifying well-being. Because we know somebody's well-being score and know who they're connected to in the product, we begin for the very first time to understand these relationships between that people form and how that varies and clusters based on your well-being. So, you know, we're at the very beginning, I think, of you know, the technology's sort of capability to begin to leverage in practical ways these kinds of ideas that are coming out of the sort of network science who are putting together, you know, looking at networks as the way to make an intervention, as opposed to just focusing always on individuals. And, you know, again, that's the MU part of MU Health. We design network interventions, not just individual applications that individuals can use.
Right. So you're using the power of the social influence to sort of help initiate the change and then also, I'm guessing, to help sustain it. And so
correct.
with your QuitNet, I mean, even though this is not a discussion on how to quit smoking, it's a discussion on how to change behavior. And so if you develop this system that successfully helped people quit something that is incredibly difficult to do, I'm wondering, what can you describe what that process was for QuitNet and how it went about helping people stop a behavior?
Sure. I want to give credit where credit is due here. QuitNet was the brainchild of Nate Cobb, who at that point was a young man in the early 90s. So this is very early on in the history of the web. And Nate had this idea. He was a smoking cessation counselor at night and a computer programmer by day. And he would go to his, Thursday night session in the North End here in Boston. And no one, you know, except for a handful of people would show up. And he thought that the web would turn out to be a way to help smokers come together to help each other quit smoking, and built the very first prototype of QuitNet that launched in 1995. So a very early idea of, you know, of a community site, website, that could have, you know, therapeutic results. And, you know, the site has continued, has evolved since then. And as I mentioned earlier, we spun it out as a private company in 2001. And it continued to grow and prosper and has helped millions of people quit smoking. But at the core of the idea really is there's a couple of things that I think were really powerful about QuitNet. One is that it allowed smokers to connect with each other in a way that could be entirely anonymous. People are pretty, most smokers almost to a person know that the behavior they're engaged in, in fact, you know, the addictive behavior that they're engaged in is life-threatening. And they want to quit. But it's a powerful addiction that usually requires many serious attempts to quit before someone is successful. And the Surgeon General recommendations of that era, which continue to be true, call for, you know, social support as part of your therapy. So as a, you know, QuitNet embodied those therapeutic recommendations, you know, as a web-based application. So it's this combination of giving people a safe place to connect with each other, and other smokers who have gone through this and succeeded, normalizing good behavior, and, you know, a flexible way for people to support each other and to celebrate success. People who quit smoking usually know not only what day they quit or what hour they quit, but often remember, you know, I quit at 11:32, you know, p.m. on January 3rd, you know, 1998. It's that sort of powerful an idea. So the social aspect of it is critical. You know, most people didn't start smoking alone, and they don't quit alone either.
That's a great point. You're right. No one starts smoking alone. And I'm wondering how important is it, depending on the behavior that you want to either initiate or stop, to be around others that have already succeeded or who are going through it with you. So, for example, you said, well, it was really important for other smokers to be around other smokers who wanted to quit. Now, do you think it would have been as effective if you had a smoker who was around people who had already quit? They weren't smokers. Or was it very important to have this sort of this community of people that were all struggling together and could share sort of in the triumphs and the heartache along the way?
I think that's exactly what started working, and later on, Nate Cobb, the founder of QuitNet, went off to medical school, became a physician. And as a physician, also started his own research into social network analysis using the QuitNet data set as a playground, and began to draw these network maps and draw out the insight of some of the QuitNet sort of community mechanics. And we began to see just that there was a tremendous sort of within the site and the community of users, there was a tremendous heterogeneity of new people coming into the program who were still smoking, and veteran quitters who would stay around in the site for years, who would reach out to these people and pull them into the fabric of this of the online social support system. And we came to understand that this was a really critical aspect of the site, that modeling of behavior and being around people who had gone through it as well as people around, being around people who are going through it at the same time, was really an important part of the quitting process.
And so this, of course, reminds me of Alcoholics Anonymous, where you have the group meetings and you have the sponsors who have had success in not drinking, and then you have the new people come in, and there's this obvious, this very, very tight community around that. And so I'm wondering, because you don't have AA meetings online. These are all in person, face to face. Do you find that the social effect is not as strong when it's online, or can you get pretty much the same kind of bang for your buck whether it's online or in person?
Good question, and something that has always come up over the years. Quitnet kind of begs comparison to AA. These are very different. Alcoholism and nicotine addiction are really different things with some clear parallels in it. They're both highly addictive substances and usually involve a lot of social activity in becoming addicted. I'm not sure that AA, which is an extraordinarily successful real-world, in-person, face-to-face model, can easily be ported to an online model. But I can say that it works for nicotine addiction. It's not for everybody, this is a huge, smoking remains a huge public health issue worldwide, and even in the United States, it still kills 450,000 Americans every year, smoking-related diseases, which is an astonishing number. It's really important to figure out if there are scalable, low-cost online interventions that can help mass numbers of smokers quit smoking. And I think Quitnet was an early example, and now there are others that have had considerable success in making that happen. It's not the only requirement. Quitnet in its commercial form is bundled together with approved FDA-approved pharmaceutical products for quitting smoking, the nicotine patch, gum, and lozenge, as well as combined with behavioral support and therapy that can be offered telephonically with a phone coach. But the web is an important vehicle and becomes a kind of platform, the infrastructure for the social engagement that really hasn't found a counterpart, in telephonic-based coaching, which is a one-to-one relationship.
And so let's talk specifically about MeU Health. I've been using it for some time now. And so let me just share with the listeners that, and you, a huge kudos to you, the company, the developers, the designers. It is a beautiful, beautiful experience. I mean, if I were to create something like this, this would be my dream creation, because graphically it's fantastic. You get points. Everything there seems to work really well and very intuitively. And so there's one thing that really stands out about the daily challenge. And that is that this daily challenge, every day, you get this email that asks you to do something to improve your well-being or improve your health. And that something that you're asked to do is always very, very small. It's a tiny little thing that you're asked to do. And I've had many of these interviews, talked to lots of experts, and some will say, well, you need to think big. You got to create these huge, grandiose goals, because that's going to give you the motivation. That's going to cause you to want to go out and take some action. And then on the flip side of that, you have professors. For example, Professor B.J. Fogg. He's a a professor at Stanford. He's also the founder of the Persuasive Technology Lab. He's done a tremendous amount of research on behavior change. And his theory, like yours, is you don't go after the huge, huge things. You go after the very, very small behaviors. So maybe you can talk a little bit about why are these daily challenges, why are the challenges really not so much a challenge? Why are they so darn easy?
That's a great question, and you know, there's long and short answers to that. So let me try to give you a medium-sized answer. We started NIU Health just 2 years ago. We spun out of this larger company named Healthways, and we had a mission, which was to figure out how to engage people in ways that could improve their well-being. We didn't start with the small action, small daily action idea. We actually started with some market research that involved one-on-one conversations, two-hour conversations with some three dozen individuals. We had some product ideas, but from this, you know, emerged a couple of things. One is that, you know, we're all really busy. And, you know, this idea of the attention economy and, you know, how do you get a few minutes, how do you get anybody's attention when you're competing with so much through the course of the day? And so we knew that our ask of you needed to be really brief. So, you know, we set our sights literally on, you know, can we get 3 or 4 minutes of people's time every day? Or most days for a long period of time, and if we can, then we think we can actually have an impact in changing your behavior, because the, you know, so-called sustained engagement is kind of the holy grail in the wellness business. Everybody talks about it because everybody knows that in order to really to help people adopt healthy behaviors consistently, it requires, you know, lots of support and engagement over time. But very few products deliver on that promise. So that was that's why we were created, and that's what we focused on. And so out of these interviews came this idea that we had to compete with people's time. We were targeting a few minutes of time. We wanted this to be action oriented. We didn't sort of want to provide, this is not a, helping people adopt healthy behaviors for the most part is not about education. Everybody knows, you know, most of the basics here, whether it's sort of healthy eating or physical activity, it's sort of how do you move people into action? So we wanted to focus on action. And we, you know, through the course of our own internal conversations, arrived at this idea of, you know, why not present to people a small daily action that we ask them to do, in no small part to raise mindfulness and consciousness about, you know, what it is they do on a daily basis. And as opposed to lots of other products out there, we didn't even want to ask you to think about it. We wanted to send you a suggestion every day that broadly has to do with your well-being, and see if you can do it, see if you wanted to do it. So when we first rolled out the product a year and a half ago as a sort of beta site, which was a simple, every morning we would send out an email, and it was purely an email interaction. We enrolled about 1,400 people into the program that we recruited off of Facebook for the most part. And, you know, we were blown away by the level of engagement week after week after week. We ran that for about 12 weeks, if I recall. And we were buoyed enough by the interaction model. The simplicity of the idea is its power. Every day at 7 a.m., we're going to send you a suggested small action that you can do in the space of your day. It might take 3 or 4 or 5 minutes. And then we ask you to click the done button and share how you did it. And, you know, connect with a small circle of people that you care about. And it's really taken off. Today there are over 165,000 people have signed up for the program, and you know, we're learning more and more about the social dimensions of it. Great to hear that you find it a fun, simple product. You know, like all these things, getting to a fun, simple presentation is a lot of hard work and complexity.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that you're the Apple of the of this industry, because the product is so easy to use, and because you're probably a fan of data and research and analysis, I'm wondering if you found any correlation between people who do the daily challenges and their level of well-being.
That's a really good question, and we haven't answered it yet. But what we have found so far is that there is a really strong correlation between the number of social connections you have in daily challenge and completion rates of daily challenges. So in other words, you know, with each connection you add in the daily challenge, up to about 12 connections, your completion rates go from, you know, fairly low levels to really high levels, like over 75%. So there's a, you know, something going on there, and that's exactly what we designed the product to do, to not only be sort of simple action delivered to you, you know, asking, you know, there's a low cognitive load for people to interact with this, which we designed on purpose, but we also just really encourage people to bring other people that you care about into a small circle and support each other. What we haven't done yet, but we're designing a research study as we speak, literally, that will get at this, is whether or not the completion of small daily actions in this well-being context that we've created actually leads to a measurable improvement in well-being. We think we're well underway because we've solved the first critical problem, which is just engaging people.
Yeah, and then the second piece, I think, is the sort of the holy grail, is if these small, again, seemingly insignificant challenges actually add up to increasing one's overall well-being. And because if that is the case, there's a tremendous amount of research on what happens when you have a higher level of well-being, whether it's, you know, more productivity at work, better health, fewer sick days, more creativity, all of those kinds of things come out of higher well-being.
You're right. You know, this is where our status as a subsidiary of HealthWays really comes into play for us. HealthWays, which is a Nashville-based company that started as a disease management company and has expanded quite aggressively over the past 5 or 6 years into wellness services. A couple of years ago, HealthWays banded together with Gallup in a 25-year strategic relationship to produce something called the Gallup HealthWays Wellbeing Index, which is a monumental effort to categorize and quantify and measure the well-being of everyone in the country. And over a million people have been surveyed over the last couple of years, with, you know, thousands of calls being made every night to, you know, that run the caller through a battery of questions that ends up developing this index of well-being. And it's that framework that we have built Daily Challenge upon. Daily Challenge is a well-being product with well-being defined by the Gallup HealthWays Well-Being Index. And in fact, there's a tool on the site that we call the Well-Being Tracker that's derived from this broader national survey instrument. The well-being tracker is 42 questions that, if you answer them all, will give you your well-being score. And most of the people in the product get their well-being score. Turns out that people are really interested in that. And, you know, the Gallup Healthways work has led to a growing body of research that shows, as you indicated, if you can increase the well-being of the population, say your employee population, you're going to see pretty dramatic results that include, you know, for every 1 point increase in well-being, and it's scored on a scale of 0 to 100, you're going to see 1% drop in medical claims costs, and, you know, 2% drop in absenteeism. And there's direct causal, direct correlation, with a strong correlation between well-being improvement and productivity. So if we have a product here, the Daily Challenge, that can be, you know, that can engage a mass audience in a highly social way that people enjoy using and can interact quite simply, you know, with a few minutes in the course of their day, that can actually improve well-being, we're going to have a blockbuster business on our hands.
Absolutely. And I'm guessing that what may be happening is, for the if indeed doing these daily challenges does increase well-being, my, you know, layperson guess is that the people who are doing these don't necessarily just stop with the daily challenge. I think what would probably happen is you get this daily challenge about, I don't know, eating a piece of red fruit or red vegetable or taking the stairs. That starts this whole process. That you don't just finish with that, but your mind starts thinking in new, more healthful ways, and you start doing other kinds of things. Especially because I think for a lot of people, once you start doing something, all of a sudden you look at your brain says, well, wow, I'm someone who takes the stairs. Oh, okay. So I'm that kind of a person now. And so therefore you start doing other kinds of things that support this new view you have of yourself. And, and so whatever the mechanism is, whether it's the daily challenge or whether they do a little bit more, hey, you're getting them started. And the stats that you threw out about increasing your well-being index by a point, you know, increases productivity and reduces healthcare costs. I mean, that is fantastic. And so I'm really anxious to see once you start getting some of those results back from that research you're going to do.
You know, and we're you mentioned the work of B.J. Fogg, who's a social scientist and researcher out at Stanford University. He's been kicking around at this intersection of sort of behavior change and technology for a long time, and one of his first books was called Persuasive Technology. Actually featured QuitNet, our early implementation of this online smoking cessation service. And, you know, BJ has this interesting framework, and again, it was really useful for us as application developers, that kind of took this idea of a small daily action, small action, and he called it a dot. And if you can string together these so-called dot behaviors over some period of time, you know, some span of time, you might successfully begin to develop what he called a path of new behavior. And it really is what we designed this product to do, and we actually kind of ran into Fogg's sort of behavior change framework after we started development of the product, but it's turned out to be the perfect metaphor for what we're trying to do. We're trying to engage people in simple dot behaviors, string them together over time, and with enough social support, and if you keep it light and fun and interesting and doable, you might actually, you know, begin to see long-term changes in your health behavior.
And so what I would encourage every listener, every reader to do is go to meyouhealth.com. Sign up for that daily challenge. It is, I get it every morning, and it's always very simple. And you earn points, and you can, it's just such a cool system that you all have developed. And again, it's these dot behaviors. They're very easy to do. They're not going to take you more than a minute or two or three. And you get kind of a momentary boost because you're like, yeah, you know what? I did that. That was easy. Now I can go about my day. And so check it out, meuhealth.com. You can also take that well-being sort of assessment to determine what your well-being is today, and then it's a tracker, so you can continue to take it and see how your well-being increases over the weeks and over the months. So, Chris, I want to thank you for sharing your insight into behavior change and into the very, very cool things that you're doing at MeUHealth.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to talk with you today.